नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 6 चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट 58-60 ट्रांसलेशन एंड कमेंट्री बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We'll chant together now verse 58 and then I'll read the other two verses afterwards and this translation is only of the first verse, yeah. So, Ekada Asau Lanam Yataha Pitri Sandesha Krit Dvijaha Adaya Tataha. Avritaha Pala Pushpa Samit Kushan. Ekada sauvanang yata. Sorry. Ekada sauvanang yata. Pitri sandesha krit dvijaha. Adaya tata avritta. Pala pushpa samit kushan. Ekadaso vanam yata. Pitri sandesha kridvijaha. Adaya tata avritta. Pala pushpa samit kushan. Okay, the next two verses. The darsha kaminam kanchit chid chudram saha bhujishyaya pitva chadhu pitva cha madhu marayang mada ghurnita netraya mattaya vishlatan nivya vyapetang nirapatrapam Kridantam anugayantam hasantam anayantike. Once this Brahmana, Ajamil, following the order of his father, went to the forest to collect fruit, flowers, and two kinds of grass called Samit and Kusha. On the way home, he came upon a Shudra, a very lusty fourth-class man who was shamelessly embracing and kissing a prostitute. The Shudra was smiling, singing, and enjoying, as if this were proper behavior. Both the Shudra and the prostitute were drunk. The prostitute's eyes were rolling in intoxication, and her dress had become loose. Such was the condition in which Ajamil saw them. Purport. While traveling along the public way, Ajamil came upon a fourth-class man and a prostitute who are vividly described here. Drunkenness was sometimes manifest even in bygone ages, although not very frequently. In this age of Kali, however, such sin is to be seen everywhere, for people all over the world have become shameless. Long ago, when he saw the scene of the drunken Shudra and the prostitute, Ajamil, who was a perfect brahmachari, was affected. Nowadays such sin is visible in so many places, and we must consider the position of a brahmachari student who sees such behavior. For such a brahmachari to remain steady is very difficult, unless he is extremely strong in following the regulative principles. Nevertheless, if one takes the Krishna consciousness very seriously, he can withstand the provocation created by sin. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we prohibit illicit sex, intoxication, meat-eating, and gambling. In Kali Yuga, a drunk, half-naked woman embracing a drunk man is a very common sight, especially in the Western countries. And restraining oneself after seeing such things is very difficult. Nevertheless, if by the grace of Krishna one adheres to the regulated principles and chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Krishna will certainly protect him. Indeed, Krishna says that his devotee is never vanquished. Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhaktav pranashyati. Therefore, all the disciples practicing Krishna consciousness should obediently follow the regulated principles and remain fixed in chanting the holy name of the Lord. Then there need be no fear. Otherwise, one's position is very dangerous, especially in this Kali Yuga. So, here is the beginning of the downfall of Ajamil, the well-known narration given here in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, of how Ajamil, although a very pure brahmana, had never performed any sinful activities in his life, by seeing low-class man and woman engaged in sexual proclivities, his mind became disturbed, and he also fell down to the stage of illicit sex, and subsequently engaged in all kinds of sinful activities, stealing, cheating, lying, drunkenness. And as the story has a happy ending, he chanted the name Narayan at the time when he was scheduled to die. He got a reprieve. He remembered his previous life. He gave up his sinful activities. He repented for them. And he did sadhana of bhakti, and he went back to Godhead, despite being so sinful. And then there's the narration of how the Yamadutas came to take him at the time when he was supposed to die, but he was saved by the Vishnu Dutas because he called out the name of Narayana. So there are so many instructive points. Here, the particular point that Srila Prabhupada emphasizes in this purport is that in the present day, especially in the Western countries, and especially increasingly here in India, especially in big cities like this, Hyderabad, there is explicit, widespread sexual provocation, which makes it very difficult for anyone who wants to be a brahmachari. Here it said Ajamil was a brahmachari. He was married, but he was following the principles of brahmacharya, as indeed every devotee who wants to make proper spiritual advancement has to do. But it's very difficult in such a situation where there's so much sexual provocation. Here still in Hyderabad, in most parts of the city, at most times of the day, you won't see men and women publicly embracing, although that can be anywhere, anytime in the Western countries. But there are billboards, or there are cinema advertisements, which are very low class, showing sexual activities, sexual provocation, so that sanskara is within the heart. The impression is within the heart. Interestingly, that's not directly discussed in Bhagavad Gita. And not much here in Bhagavatam either. But it's well known in Vedic culture. And the Buddhists also talk a lot about this. In the Yoga Sutras, it's described. The impressions within the heart. In the Nectar of Devotion, that's discussed in a different way. Bijam kutam, the seed of sin. That means There's the basic desire to forget Krishna and enjoy this material world. Then kutam, there's a mountain of dormant sinful desires within the heart. And they're there in a latent, non-explicit sense, but then when one is provoked for sensual enjoyment, when there's provocation, for instance, well, this is a clear example, that Ajamil, he hadn't experienced sexual desires, gross sexual desires in this lifetime, but the seed of that desire was there within his heart from previous lifetimes. Obviously, he's a very pious person, but everyone in this material world has sinful desires in the heart. So when he saw that Shudra with the prostitute, that general latent desire for sexual enjoyment, gross, illicit sexual enjoyment, became manifest specifically as the desire to enjoy that particular woman, which he did. That was the cause of his fall down. That was his fall down. Now, Srila Prabhupada gives some hope for all of us who are trying to practice Krishna consciousness in an age and an atmosphere which, not only for this reason, but very prominently for this reason, is very difficult. There are all kinds of sinful activities. Illicit sex is prominent, but all kinds of sinful activities completely pollute the whole atmosphere. People are worried about pollution of the atmosphere by discharge of industrial wastes and vehicle emissions. But in another sense, atmosphere means the whole ethos, the psychic atmosphere, and that is polluted by sinful activities and advertisements for sinful activities. The whole materialistic sinful atmosphere is very polluting. So how to escape from that, or how can we withstand the provocation created by sin? Srila Prabhupada writes, if one takes to Krishna consciousness very seriously, he can withstand the provocation created by sin. To remain steady is very difficult unless he is extremely strong in following the regulative principles. Now, sometimes within our movement, I am criticized somewhat for being very strict. But Srila Prabhupada writes here that if one is extremely strong in following the regulated principles, if one is takes to Krishna consciousness very seriously, he can withstand the provocation created by sin. That means if we don't follow very seriously and very strictly, then we're in very serious danger of being victimized by illicit sex and all other sinful activities. So, better to be serious and strict. I can't understand why anyone who even theoretically understands what Krishna consciousness is should be anything but serious and strict in the practice. If we've actually understood, then why should we want to relax? Why should we want to make any compromise with material life? And practically, we see that those who are not strict in following, then it's almost ipso facto, which means because of that fact, then they succumb. If you're not strict, that means automatically you're compromising with Maya. There's only There's only Krishna consciousness and Maya. There are two things. So either you have one or you have the other. We're enjoined to be Krishna conscious. But if you want to mix it with Maya, well, we're not in control. We may think, okay, I'll have 10% Maya or 5% Maya, but even to think like that is offensive, to deliberately indulge oneself. There may be some case, the license that grihasthas have for sense gratification, if it's dovetailed in Krishna's service, but it's very dangerous. If one thinks, just like the child may think, well, I like to play with matches and fire. So the child may think, well, I'll only play a little bit, 10 minutes a day, and my parents won't see me. I'll do it. But it's very dangerous. Playing with fire, there's an English phrase, playing with fire. It means to deliberately mess around with that which is very dangerous. Like embracing a poisonous snake or some such thing. It's a dangerous thing to do. Possibly the snake won't bite you, but quite likely he will. Yeah. Then you're in trouble for your bravado. So we are in such a society. That's coming to India. Everything bad is coming, and now this new government is very much promoting development. They all talk about this. Development, industrial development, means degradation, actually. Degradation of character. You can't have promotion of industrialization without degradation of character. It's actually required, because if you promote industry, then you have to produce items which people have to buy, and then to get them to buy it, you have to advertise it. To advertise it, you have to promote an attitude of sense gratification, and it all goes down in one big vortex of. And then even to get people to work, they have to be to work so hard to produce so many things and to buy so many things that they don't need. You have to make people stupid. Which stupidity and the desire for sense gratification, they go together. Jnanamavritya dehinam. The material desire covers the knowledge of the conditioned soul. In English there's this word wisdom, which is differentiated from simply knowledge or intelligence. So we think of the wise old man or the wise sage. But wisdom that cannot arise in a person who is a puppet in the hands of Maya. So even one may be very learned and superficially very intelligent, one cannot be wise if one is attached to material enjoyment. One will always be foolish. Cannot detach himself, cannot detach his intelligence from the quest for sense gratification. Becomes like foolishly, like a child, desires that which is not for his benefit, playing with fire. Srila Prabhupada, he often criticized modern society that people are like cats and dogs. They're very proud of being very advanced, but they're like cats and dogs. And specifically, he gave this example in relationship to the sexual habits of cats and dogs who mate without responsibility. They don't go through any astrological test or something like that. Of course, if they're bred cats and dogs, then the people breed cats and dogs to sell them for profit, so then they don't get to choose their mate. But otherwise, the cats and dogs are on the street, And there's no real courting among the dogs. It's just the one, all the dogs get around and snarl at each other, and the strongest one gets to enjoy the bitch. And among the cats, you hear them at night making all kinds of ghoulish noises, which is their pre-sexual love affair. And then they mate, and then there's no husband. I mean, some animals and birds, they have just like husband and wife, but the dogs and the cats, it's not like that. The bitch gets pregnant, she gets impregnated, she has a litter of 5 or 6 puppies, and then next time she gets pregnant, she goes in heat, then it's whichever dog happens to be around. There's no fixed dog to the male doesn't take any responsibility. Just he has sex and that it's gone. That's all, isn't it? So like that in human society. Simply they have sex and they go away. And then the woman has a child, or in many cases they don't have a child because they use contraception or abortion. And this way commit more sins. And one sin is piled on top of another. And then they may have children, and then the child never saw their father. They may not, even the mother may not know who the father is, as in the case of Satyakama. This Jabali Satyakama given in the Upanishads. Or they may have a father for some time, and then they get another father and another one. The biological father isn't there. Or it may be, I was in Ireland recently, and I was told about one female devotee who was living there, that one of her daughters in Denmark, she's from Denmark, one of her daughters has 3 children. And she's married, but she doesn't have a husband. She's married to a woman. And the 3 children are all by artificial insemination, just like you do to cows in this country. So, this is where you're going, India. This is the way it's going. Cat and dogs, sophisticated cats and dogs. Previously, even in the West, non-devotees who are shudras or worse, they'd eat meat and drink alcohol and just completely normal. I was raised in a culture where eating meat and drinking alcohol is normal, although you're not supposed to drink alcohol legally until you're 18, but almost everyone started quite well before that. But at least the culture among most of the people was they got married and they stayed married. They didn't think of divorce. And they got married in a church, and it was considered something religious. But nowadays, the Hindus, they get married and they call in a priest, and they do it as quick as they can. It used to be a several day function, but no one wants to stay around very long, and it's too expensive, you have to get back to work on so many reasons, so they finish it off in a couple of hours. So it's theoretically religious, but not very religious. And nowadays the whole approach to marriage seems to be quite different. It's almost as if it's expected that there's a good chance that the husband and wife aren't going to stay together very long. And so it's more like a... For many, it's more like a live-in relationship. There was some scandal recently, many people are scandalized at the Supreme Court ruling that here in India that a live-in relationship is not illegal, but the so-called marriage is not that much different. They get together for some time, try it out, and if they don't like it, they mostly won't like it because their main criterion is if they like it, instead of being committed as a religious commitment, they're just saying, well, do I like it? Do Do I like them? And actually, if you think if I like my husband or I like my wife, well, mostly you won't. In most cases, it's very difficult to live with anyone in this world if we're thinking about what I like all the time. Because the other person is also thinking like that, and then there's a clash of interest. So instead of thinking how we have to cooperate together to serve Krishna, or to, even if one isn't very religious, to fulfill our role in society. Actually, most people didn't even think about it. They just got married and they didn't think about why they should stay together. They just, everyone stayed together, and they just stayed together, that's all. Till death us do part. That's in the Christian marriage rite. In sickness or in health, in poverty or in wealth, and on and on and on. The last line, till death us do part. That was also the title of a comedy series. Till death us do part, about this horrible, horrible person who was, but the wife was married to him. She'd just tolerate and tolerate, and then every so often she'd yell at him and he'd shut up for a few minutes. East London, low class East London, low class even by English standards. Of course, the English think they're very high class, and they made a pretty good job of convincing the rest of the world that they are high class, but in a culture where people eat beef and drink alcohol, it's not very high class. But anyway, propaganda rules. So they had at least that much dignity that they'd stay together. Nowadays, there's no such idea. And cats, dogs, monkeys, call them what you like. Srila Prabhupada, in one purport, he mentioned, it's actually in the Bhagavatam, and there's the fifth canto talks about very heavy statements, the forest of the material world, how people are interested in sense gratification like monkeys. So Srila Prabhupada wrote about some of his disciples. So they take the vows to follow the four regulative principles, but then they fall down and like monkeys they engage in illicit sex. So he referred to his monkey-like disciples. He wasn't very pleased with them. We often hear how Srila Prabhupada is very merciful, that he tolerated his disciples falling down and this and that. But that's not really an excuse to say that, well, okay, I'll fall down, and then Prabhupada's very merciful. He clearly wasn't pleased by it at all. If we actually take the take very seriously what we sing every morning, if we get up for Mangalavati, Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado, yasya prasada nagati katopi. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one attains the mercy of Krishna. By his not attaining his mercy, then we don't attain Krishna, whatever else happens. So we should think then how to dhyang stuvang tasya yashastri sandham. We should meditate upon his glories three times a day. We should also meditate upon if we're pleasing him. Not just sit on the shelf, Guru. Just sit there and we'll worship you. But you're actually supposed to follow the instructions. One thought I wish to share about this is that, well, within our movement, there's not much discussion of these things nowadays as there used to be. It used to be that devotees were mostly very serious about trying to overcome the force of sexual desire. But we don't hear that discussed much nowadays, and devotees are raised in a culture where illicit sex is the norm, increasingly so here in India also. And within our movement, if we don't talk about that, then it might seem that it's not so very important. Especially when we see devotees all around us getting divorced and falling down this way, that way, another way, and no one says anything about it, then we may think, well, it's just part of life. A few years ago in Croatia, in the Lika festival, in a rural area of Croatia in Europe, the local priest came. He was invited. The Catholic priest. Croatia's a nominally Catholic country, like every other Catholic country, nominally, in name only. So he came along. He was, I guess, in his early 30s by age, and he came with his girlfriend, who was all dressed up like she was going to a fashion show with high heel shoes and everything, which you don't see in the villages, even in the West much. Usually the girls, in the cities, they dress up, not much in the village. And I asked the devotee who was hosting him, how come he came with a... Obviously, it wasn't his sister. She was his girlfriend. And he said, well, what do the local people think? They say, you know, it's natural. It's natural. Well, yeah, in this mature world it is natural for man to be attracted to woman, but then in this mature world it's also natural to die and get born again. I was just listening that Srila Prabhupada morning walk, they were talking about evolutionary theory, and Prabhupada made the point that, well, if we're evolving, is it saying that man is the perfection of evolution, well, why didn't you evolve so you don't die? Why that? There's no sign of man or any other creature evolving to a stage where they don't die. So, how is your evolution? How are you actually improving? If you actually came to the stage where you didn't die, then that would be the perfection. But that will never be. So devotees in our movement, it seems the atmosphere or the ethos is that, well, you know, everybody's doing it, so we can also. And even we see, it's not unknown, I was talking about the local priest in the Catholic Church, what would you think if there was a sannyasi in our movement who went around everywhere with a beautiful young girl? What would you think? What would you think? Any thoughts about that? You probably think it's pretty bogus, wouldn't you? Couldn't happen in our... Well, there are at least two in our movement who do that. And no one says anything. So it just seems to be taken as normal. I'm going to read something. Going to read from Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, commentary. Abhayam sattva... What is it? Abhaya sattva sangshudhir jnana yoga vyavastitihi. The rules for what is expected of a sannyasi, Srila Prabhupada comments. There are so many rules and regulations to be followed in the renounced order of life. Most important of all, a sannyasi is strictly forbidden to have any intimate relationship with a woman. He is even forbidden to talk with a woman in a secluded place. Lord Chaitanya was an ideal sannyasi, and when he was at Puri, his feminine devotees could not even come near to offer their respects. They were advised to bow down from a distant place. This is not a sign of hatred for women as a class, but it is a stricture imposed on the sannyasi not to have close connections with women. One has to follow the rules and regulations of a particular status of life in order to purify his existence. For a sannyasi, intimate relations with women and possession of wealth for sense gratification are strictly forbidden. The ideal sannyasi was Lord Chaitanya himself, and we can learn from his life that he was very strict in regards to women. Although he is considered to be the most liberal incarnation of Godhead, accepting the most fallen conditioned souls, he strictly followed the rules and regulations of the sannyas order of life in connection with association with woman. One of his personal associates, namely Chota Haridas, was associated with Lord Chaitanya along with his other confidential personal associates. But somehow or other, this Chota Haridas looked lustily on a young woman, and Lord Chaitanya was so strict that he had once rejected him from the society of his personal associates. Lord Chaitanya said, for a sannyasi, or anyone who is aspiring to get out of the clutches of material nature, and trying to elevate himself to the spiritual nature and go back home, back to Godhead, for him, looking toward material possessions and women for sense gratification, not even enjoying them, but just looking toward them with such a propensity, it is so condemned that he had better commit suicide before experiencing such illicit desires. That's a verse which is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, taken from the Chaitanya Chandradaya Natak. What is that verse? Niskinchananam bhagavad bhajanon mukasya parang param jigamisho bhavasagarasya. Next line. Sandashitam vishayana matayoshicham cha ha hanta hanta vishabhakshanatopya sadhu. Heavy stuff. Taking sannyasis, it's not something to try out and see how, if you can do it or not. It's a very heavy commitment. So, but unless the sannyasis give up bhogaishvarya, bhogaishvarya prasaktanam tayapahrita chetasam vyavasayatmaka buddhi samadho navidhiyate, one cannot achieve fixity of consciousness in spiritual life unless one gives up at least endeavoring for material sense gratification and attachment, prasakta, prasakti, that would be strong attachment to wealth and sense enjoyment, then one cannot achieve spiritual perfection. So if it is perceived, either rightly or wrongly, if it is perceived that the sannyasis, or those who are supposed to be gurus and spiritual leaders, they're attached to women and wealth and luxurious living, then how will the followers, the devotees in general, ever get the inspiration or even the idea that they're supposed to give up sense gratification and opulent life? And then how can anyone make any spiritual advancement? For those who are supposed to set the ideal, if they themselves appear to be material enjoyers, maybe not grossly, but clearly sannyasis are meant for, it's called the renounced order of life. And it's not just some kind of renunciation in the mind, one is supposed to exemplify that by one's behavior. So unless they do, then what hope is there for everyone else? Even little things. If a sannyasi is addicted to drinking tea, for instance, I'm told there's some sannyasi who drink tea. Green tea, I'm told. So apparently it doesn't have any intoxication in it. I don't know. Chocolate. Okay, chocolate's not a very big thing, but it's not required for Krishna. The only point to take it is for sense gratification. It doesn't enhance one's Krishna consciousness even in the slightest manner. So why should one take it? For the pleasure of the tongue. That's all. And then, if those who are supposed to be the ideal, they indulge in these things, then how will anyone ever get any inspiration to give up sense gratification? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in one of his purports. I believe it's Machitta Madgata Prana. There's a similar verse in the 11th canto of Paraspara Pakatanam. Yeah, similar verse. So I believe it's in his purport to that verse, says that one devotee, seeing that another devotee has given up sense gratification, thinks that, oh, then I shall also give up sense gratification. But if we see someone who's supposed to be an advanced devotee and is engaging in sense gratification, then you'll think that, well, you can be advanced and engage in sense gratification also, and then you become Prakriti Sahajya. The whole thing goes to hell. Then we all become monkey disciples. Okay, I have a lot more to say about this, but I'm not going to say it now because we'll go way over time otherwise. So I plan on continuing this tomorrow, unless some thunderbolt comes out of the sky to blast me down for being so offensive. So any questions about this so far? Yes. Okay, so any questions about what we just discussed before we digress here, there, and elsewhere? You have to speak a little more loudly. Like what should be the approach? You're in the habit. It's a common habit nowadays. People say like every third or fourth word. They have to insert the word like, which has no meaning whatsoever. What should be the attitude in dealing with such devotees? Well, keep your distance. Dure dandavat. Respect them from a distance. Because sangat sanjayate kamaha, one's desires arise due to one's association. Yeah, you wanted to ask something? Give that mic so I can hear. Why did Krishna choose to teach Arjuna the Bhagavad Gita when Vyasadeva was present in the world? Yudhishthira was there, who seemed to be very philosophical, more than Arjuna. In fact, Arjuna made a big fool of himself, as Krishna said, by talking all nonsense. Well, one thing is because the opportunity arose, because Arjuna did make so many objections, and then the opportunity arose to counter those objections to fighting. But particularly why Krishna spoke to Arjuna is told by Krishna himself to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam hi teruta. Sa eva yang maya teja yoga prokta puratanaha. He said that this science of yoga, which I spoke long ago, I'm speaking that same thing to you today because you are my devotee and my friend. Therefore, I'm revealing this mystery to you. You please study this Bhagavad Gita as it is. Do you have that?
Yeah, we have two books.
You have it? Two. That means one in English, one in Telugu?
Yes.
So you please see. That's that must be chapter 4, text number 3, is it not? Chapter 4, text 3. In the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada elaborates on this point also. Hare Krishna. To be continued. We might hope that within the next 24 or 23 hours, the whole world situation will change, and then we won't have to continue it, and then we can just talk about the love of Radha and Krishna. But it's not expected, according to Shastra. According to Shastra, by tomorrow things are going to be worse, because tatashchanudanam dharma satyam sochang shamadaya kalena balina rajan nangshantyayur balang smritihi. In Kali Yuga, all the good qualities get worse, or they decline day by day. Okay, Hare Krishna.